Hi, everybody. Welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, our guest is Peg Kritz, who lives in Russian River in West Sonoma County. Peg spent most of her career teaching high school government and economics. She also was the teacher facilitator of the first LGBTQI group on her campus. Hello, Peg.
Hi there. How are you both? I'm very happy to be here. I am happy to be in Sonoma County, happy to be under these beautiful redwoods, and very much looking forward to speaking with the two of you.
We're really looking forward to it and finding out more about your life in detail and learning about your life as well. But first, here's news and events with Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of April 6th, 2025. The Trump administration has opened an investigation into the Walt Disney Company about their DEI practices. Last Thursday, Brendan Carr, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, sent a letter to Disney's CEO, Bob Iger, saying that the media behemoth was under investigation over its use of diversity, equity, and inclusion in hiring. Carr wrote, quote, "In particular, I want to ensure that Disney and ABC have not been violating FCC equal employment opportunity regulations by promoting invidious forms of DEI discrimination," end quote. Carr claimed that he has the authority to investigate Disney, which he counts legacy network ABC as part of its large portfolio, which ABC is a regulated entity. Wrote that the Communications Act and Commission prohibits media companies from, quote, discriminating on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, age, or gender, end quote. Carr didn't point to any specific Disney content, but cited reports of initiatives that would, quote, amount to segregated affinity groups and spaces, end quote. The FCC chairman announced a similar investigation into Comcast, corporate owner of MSNBC, last month. Earlier in March, Disney shareholders overwhelmingly rejected a right-wing investor group's demand that the company withdraw its participation in the Human Rights Campaign annual Corporate Equality Survey. And in the state of Alabama, Public Library Service voted to pause $40,000 in funding to the Fairhope Public Library after the anti-LGBTQ plus activist group Cleanup Alabama and Moms for Liberty complained that the library had failed to abide by recent LGBTQ plus book bans. However, a fundraiser quickly replaced the funds and then some. The Alabama Public Library Service recently introduced a new rule for categorizing books in a three-tiered system for adults, teens, and children, following complaints about LGBTQ plus themes in books. The aforementioned activist groups argued that LGBTQ plus books should be classified as adult and later complained that Fairhope Public Library failed to abide by these rules. Fairhope Library officials said that they had a recent letter from the Alabama Public Library Service board member John Wall, who also happens to be the chair of the state Republican Party, confirming that the library had conformed with the tier system. However, Wall and the board ultimately took the side of the conservative groups, voting to pause funding to the library pending further investigations. Wall said, quote, "Our goal is not to punish anyone, but to ensure that all libraries receiving state funding adhere to the established standards that protect our children," end quote. Fairhope, Alabama is known for being a hub of writers and artists in the South, making the library service's decision last week a topic of outrage among local residents that's generated national attention. And in the state of Utah, that state has become the first in the nation to ban pride flags from all government buildings, including schools. Governor Spencer Cox let the law take effect without his signature, saying he had concerns about the legislation but knew the legislature had the number of votes to override a veto. The law does not explicitly ban pride flags, but rather states that no flags can fly at government buildings other than state flags, military flags, the American flag, tribal flags, and a few others. State and local government buildings will be fined $500 a day for violating the law, which takes effect May 7th. Cox told lawmakers that he agreed with the concept that classrooms should be politically neutral, but he felt that the law was too extreme in its regulation of local governments. Cox added in his letter, quote, "To our LGBTQ community, I know that recent legislation has been difficult. Politics can be a bit of a blood sport at times, and I know we've had our disagreements. I want you to know that I love and appreciate you, and I'm grateful that you are part of our state. I know these words may ring hollow to many of you, but please know that I mean them sincerely," end quote. Trans activist Alejandra Caraballo called it, quote, "cowardly that the governor let the bill take effect." In protest of the ban, leaders in Utah's capital have lit the Salt Lake City and county buildings in rainbow lights every night since the bill was sent to the governor. Salt Lake City is known for its large LGBTQ plus population, and back in 2016 was ranked as one of America's queerest cities by Advocate Magazine. Earlier this month, hundreds of demonstrators unfurled a 200-foot rainbow banner in front of the Utah State Capitol in Salt Lake City to protest the bill. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
If you just joined us, we are talking with Peg Kritz. And again, we want to thank you, Peg, for giving us a little time from your very, very busy schedule.
Well, not always so busy, but I'm really happy to be able to share some of the stories that are now, I guess, for some people in the distant past of what it was like for gay and lesbian and questioning young people to think about their true selves, I guess.
Yeah, we're looking forward to those stories. So why don't you introduce yourself to us and our listeners? And you can go into like your hobbies, your work, whatever you feel you'd like to share.
Okay. I guess I maybe just start because, you know, I'm sitting here by a window looking at the lovely redwoods around me and feel very fortunate to be in a calming place where I live. I moved up here close to my retirement from teaching, really looking for some quiet and to be around more nature and less cars and automobiles. But with that said, I feel very privileged to have been able to have the sort of two mixed careers that I had. One was as a dispatcher, an emergency communications dispatcher, which is just sort of one world, and then to be a high school teacher, which probably some people would say is just as chaotic as, you know, 911 in San Francisco, but not always. I was lucky to have some very good students during my career.
How do you identify good students?
That's a really interesting question. When I first started teaching, I wasn't really sure. And as I, you know, went through my first months as a teacher, I started to understand how one of my good friends was very, very much into music and always had, you know, this was back in the day of Walkmans. And so she would always have her headphones on and be enjoying music. And I kind of thought, you know what, if this woman were a student in my class, I would probably have to tell her numerous times to remove her headphones and listen in class. But then I realized she's a wonderful human being. So this kind of evolved into, if I had a student who I thought would be a good neighbor, then this is a student who I could work with easily. If I had a student who didn't seem to be a good neighbor, I would try and create a situation where we could eventually become good neighbors. And I think the beauty of that for me was I was able to then accept this whole variety of students and interests, because sometimes you might have a neighbor and you need to ask them why my light switch doesn't work anymore. And you might have another neighbor who, you know, you need to borrow, I don't know, that traditional cup of sugar from. So anyhow, I think that was a good approach for me to have to welcome many, many different types of students into my class.
I like that. I like that idea. It's kind of, yeah, it makes sense to think of, so you have less judgment that way, right? You have less judgment and it's more workable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I found it to be that way too. And yeah, you know, and I have to be completely honest that I did at one point in time, and if anybody's listening was in, you know, sort of an AP class or an honors class, I tended to find sometimes those students as a whole, not individually, to be kind of dull because all they wanted to do was write down things and get answers right on the test. And that doesn't create, for me, it didn't create that maybe more vibrant classroom where you have people challenging and questioning and even making sometimes the joke that needs to be told because we're all bored out of our minds learning about supply and demand. And, you know, it's Friday afternoon and it's warm and we need to break up the mood here a little bit. So
since we're talking about school, I'm just curious how you get into teaching government and economics.
Yeah. Don't want to divert too much into politics at this point in time, but one of my disappointments right now is that the system of checks and balances don't seem to be working well at all. But kind of just backtracking to when I learned about the American government and the Constitution, and then comparing it to the governments in other countries like parliamentary systems. I just found everything fascinating, how the government was structured and the sort of, what's the word? I guess the philosophies of the founders who created this government and how for many, many years, things seemed to work decently well. I mean, not as quickly as we would like. And I always hesitate now to kind of talk about how exciting that was now, because again, without getting too much off topic, it's not quite the same at the moment. And hopefully we get back to things being more regular.
So you found studying governments fascinating. And so what's your degree in? What's your BA in or your master's?
I got a degree in political science from Berkeley. And then I for a long time wanted to get additional education. And I think the beauty of teaching government and economics was I finally came to the conclusion that a master's in international relations would sort of combine the two. And the beauty of that too, you know, teaching in where I did in South Alameda County in an incredibly diverse high school, it helped me bring some international flavor to some of the students' projects and also to just some of our everyday work. And then when they had research to do, for many of them, they were able to go to family members as first-person sources and basically create these really wonderful and personal informative pieces for the rest of the class. And I think when students speak to other students, it's just a wonderful thing. They're so much more engaged. But when you have the presenter who's also very engaged because they asked their grandmother, or grandfather, or auntie, or uncle, we had these wonderful presentations, and also kids could answer questions about because they were the authority. And I guess oftentimes students don't feel that they're the authority in a positive way, that they have this information and they can share it with other young people and their teacher in many cases. So international relations helped me bring that international flavor into the classes that I taught.
Having your students be the authority, that's quite powerful for your kids.
It's interesting. I started out in the traditional high school in the district and ended my career in what many districts call your alternative school, which is kids that need a second chance for whatever reason. Some were kids who just found it easy to stay home and play video games all day. Other people, we had some single moms, young single moms in our school. And that was a real interesting student population, because these were kids who really needed a second chance, and many of them embraced it with open arms and enthusiasm. I think some of these students were the good neighbor kids, but they didn't, you know, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, for lack of a better words, but, you know, I would look up for some of them. You could just kind of see, well, what happened to them at the traditional high school? Like, this kid seems so bright. How did he or she, you know, fail English or whatever? And sometimes I would look at who their instructor was in the other school, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's the one who, you know, if you spoke to your neighbor, you would be sent to the office, you know. So there are educators that, and I use that term loosely, are just sending anybody who's not a good neighbor or doesn't look at kids as good neighbors, just sending people out of the classroom. And then kids kind of know, like, okay, the teacher doesn't like me, I don't like them. So, you know, they'll come late to class and then they'll know they'll get sent out of the room. And then they have kind of a social period walking down the hall, finding their friends. And so a lot of them, that's kind of a long way of saying, I think a lot of them needed a little more attention, but just because you talk to your neighbor in class doesn't mean you're a bad person. And it was great working with them because A, they were embracing this chance to learn and get a high school diploma. And a lot of them had been through so much. I mean, I had one young lady at that school who mom had, don't remember specifically, but her mom had mental health issues. So this young lady was making sure her brother, her younger brother, would get to school, getting herself to school on time, working in the evenings, but basically was kind of like her mom's guardian. And, you know, you've got, and then you've got some immigrant kids with their stories of how they left Afghanistan, you know, in a vegetable truck covered by a blanket, and not talking because if the driver gets stopped by some kind of border patrol people, they'll get discovered. And it's like, you know, how can I not welcome this person into my classroom? They've been through so much. And I mean, I think the beauty of that school district was, it's almost like we got to know world cultures and people from all over the world, you know, here in this like little town in South Alameda County. So did that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we can feel your passion about your teaching.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about what you're saying, too. And that was 2000 in the early 2000s, because I'm just, my relationship with students now, you know, is really hard. And they know good teaching.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you were one of those good teachers who saw the kids, you know? Because I'm hearing stories over and over again right now that they hear teachers talking about, you need to come to class because we need to get our paychecks. I say, what? Really?
Yeah.
Teachers are saying that kind of thing? It's crazy.
No. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah. I mean, I do. There's so many things I feel fortunate to. And I feel very fortunate. Like, I kind of went into teaching because I love talking about government, and that's a really boring topic for a lot of students, especially like the Electoral College. I would tell them, okay, this is really boring. I'm going to teach it as fast as I can. I'm going to break it down for you. And I said, and this is probably something nobody in your family has ever heard about, which was generally true until 2000. But I saw some of my coworkers who loved their subject, but sort of, I mean, I came to the conclusion teaching is sales. There has to be a way for me to make this interesting for students. And, you know, there's lots of great teachers who have different, super creative. I had this one coworker who was able to bring an art component into so many of her lessons. And I think that was another beauty of where I taught, was that there were so many wonderful teachers. We always had, you know, this teacher doing this, and they would share with us and we'd work together. And is there some way that you think I could do this in my classes? So I was lucky to work with a bunch of incredibly passionate, dedicated educators. And of course, we had some that weren't. But that, I think, keeps one energy level at the energy that one needs to work with young people, because young people they have a lot of energy as well.
I know you want to talk about your retirement, but it sounds like you have a lot of energy and a lot of passion. Are you doing like, what's that, podcast on teaching?
Oh, gosh.
And I mean, come on, Peg. I mean, you sound like we need more, based on what I'm hearing from my clients, young clients. They're needing good teachers out there. Some modeling or some kind of, I don't know what you're doing with your retirement, but I just thought about I just feel your passion, right, Cher?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I really appreciate that. I mean, I do think that there's a technology with education now that is very, very useful. And I was lucky to interview the woman, the younger, much younger woman who took my place when I did retire. And some of the technology that she described bringing into the classroom. I have a friend who lives nearby who teaches biology at Contra Costa JC. And she talks about how, you know, sometimes when students are submitting assignments online. You know, I guess some of the apps, you know, you just, you know, we have received your assignment. But she says that she found an app where when the student submits their assignment, like fireworks go off. And she says you can change the fireworks, like, you know, to be rabbits or cheeseburgers or something. And she says it's silly, but it's so fun, right? To get, in a sense, a little bit of gratification when you've submitted something that's been time consuming and maybe challenging and difficult. So I do definitely, technology is not my forte. So I think my contributions to current education would be pretty limited. But thank you so much for that pat on the back. I really appreciate it.
I'm just thinking about myself as an adult when I have to send something that I'm a little uptight about and I go, okay, I'm going to click send. Okay, Di, I'm clicking send. Boom, it's done. Just to have some kind of acknowledgement like, you did it. That would be cool. So I can see your the students really enjoying that. And there's a little bit of a give and take with the teacher because the teacher's changing the rabbits or the fireworks. Maybe it's Easter time and there's rabbits. And that's pretty cool. Yeah, I think art is a wonderful way to engage kids as well to the topics, especially if they're not that interesting to folks. So good for you. You sound like a teacher I would have loved.
Oh, me too.
I'll tell you one thing briefly, and this to me was sort of the one of the greatest compliments that, you know, I told my students that I was retiring, you know, but I was going to finish the school year. And I mean, I felt I had the most wonderful students that last year of teaching. I mean, it just, things were in sync. We had, you know, at the alternative school, there was one year where we had such a challenging group. Oh my gosh, just energy, like short attention span, easily distracted. And when you have three or four or five easily distracted people in the same class. So I was at a teacher's meeting with other people in the district and talking to a person I was sitting next to, and I, where are you? I said, oh, I'm at the alternative school. And she says, oh, do you have so-and-so? And I said, yes. And she said, how's that student doing? I said, doing quite well. And she just shook her head and she said, that was quite a year. So whatever was in the water that year made it a challenge. But back to my wonderful students, one of my coworkers told me that one of our shared students had asked him, Miss Kritz is retiring? And he said, yes. Has she told you that? And the student said, yes. And then the student said to him, I thought the only teachers who retired were the old and grouchy ones. And he told me that story. I said, let's make sure we give the student an A. Now, of course, we were joking. But I mean, that to me felt like, oh, good, because I wanted to get out before I was grouchy. I didn't meet the old part, but at least I wasn't the grouchy teacher that they didn't want to spend time with.
So, Peg, you mentioned that you were the first teacher facilitator for the LGBTQI group club, you call it, / club. So tell us about that. How did that get started?
That was really a pretty wonderful experience. We had a man in the district office who was gay, who was a great, like he was in charge of enrollment and stuff like that. And he spoke to the superintendent and kind of told the superintendent about the statistics of suicide amongst gay and lesbian and questioning youth. I don't know exactly the order of it. Two teachers in the middle school created a workshop. Then they looked for teachers in the district to be presenters. So there were a group of us who got together, who kind of learned the curriculum that these two middle school teachers has developed. And it was how to create safe spaces for gay and lesbian and questioning kids in every classroom of every grade level. And obviously, elementary school is going to be much different from high school. And the presenters were a very mixed group. I remember one of the coworkers was a straight male married coworker. And we all shared, why do we want to be part of this presentation? Why do we want to participate? And he says that he remembers when his sister was engaged to be married, and this was to somebody they both went to high school with, the day of her wedding, the prospective groom was nowhere to be found. And basically the wedding was called off with no warning from the prospective groom. And this man told us that the more he thought about it, the more he thought that this man was probably gay, didn't have a way to tell anybody, was probably trying to deny who he was. But this man says his sister was crushed, and he just felt he never wanted anybody else to go through what his sister did. So he wanted to help people understand who they were so that people could be helped. I mean, so we had a great group of people doing that. What came out of that was a group of youth were on a panel, and we got our youth from the city of Hayward had a gay lesbian support group. The man who created that group is a man named Ken Athey, and he's a social worker, I think maybe a therapist as well. But he also created the gay prom down there. And it was, I know I'm getting a little bit off traffic, so I'll come back to the gay prom. So we got this group of young people, which one of the teachers knew from this social group, this support group in Hayward. And they became a panel so that after our adult presentation of adults presenting to students, there was a kind of a smaller session where the youth would come in, usually two at a time, and they would answer questions. Really brave kids. But they had practiced for that. And a number of them, I have to say, a number of them I still don't see, but am in touch with on Facebook. And knock on wood, they've all become just like great human beings, many of them in long-term relationships. But then the youth said that they would like to kind of have a support group on campus. And I said, you know, if you'd like me to be your advisor, I'd be happy to do that. So the youth who had been part of the Hayward group, and some of the kids at the Hayward group were from different cities, from Fremont, from Union City. So we had the youth who were at our school create our, we called it the Rainbow Pride Club. They came up with the name. The two young women who were primary movers in that were just confident young women who were good at interacting with, you know, all kinds of kids and adults as well. Luckily for both of them, they both had great support from their families, which again, I think is super important for young people to have that adult support. And we were able to, you know, have different meetings, our usual, you know, activities. Sometimes we would just meet. Sometimes we would watch a film. Sometimes we'd have like mingles. I forget. I think we called them, and we'd go to another school or another school's, you know, LGBT support group. High school would come to our campus. You know, we talk about books. I mean, I took them on a field trip to the San Francisco Public Library because they had the Hormel Center. And now, you think about this. We're taking high school kids to a library. Really great thinking, Miss Kritz, right? How exciting would that be? Well, I knew that the part of the idea was, you know, that the librarians are always going to be friendly to everybody who comes in. So I had somebody talk to them about careers because, again, kind of a side note, kids want to go on field trips. Like any, you know, if I'm going to belong to something, darn it, I should be able to go on a field trip. So, you know, what could I do? What could I do? And how could I give them a permission slip that their parents would sign, right? So we go to Hormel, we go to the library, and the kids are really impressed with how big the library is. We get into the gay and lesbian reading room, and the kids just become incredibly silent. And then one girl says, all these books are about gays and lesbians. And it was like such a wonderful thing for them. And that's like, now I can maybe bring the gay prom in. I had chaperoned some of the regular school proms. I have never seen so many happy kids. Now they could dance with whoever they wanted to. They could be who they were. They could flirt. I mean, it was, and I go back to this man, Ken Athey, who, you know, hopefully he listens, but I just think he had the greatest positive impact on so many kids by giving them that opportunity. I mean, and that's like another whole story in itself. Very well chaperoned. The Hayward Police Department would send gay and lesbian volunteer officers in plain clothes, not to basically be the police, but to make sure the kids were safe. There were always some individuals protesting. And we would have like a kind of a greeting line of supporters to kind of screen out the protesters. Like the protesters had to stand there, but so the supportive people could stand close to the kids. So they had like a red carpet or something to walk in on. And I remember one time we were kind of getting ready to do this lineup. And this young couple, maybe they were students at Cal State East Bay, they like, oh, what's this? What's going on? And they said, really? Like, okay. And then they walked away. They came back with a sign supporting the kids. So it was like this wonderful community feeling, this wonderful amount of support for the kids. There were little like party favors they got to take home with them. I mean, and they got to be who they were, like in a safe environment. You know, the cost was like a tenth, maybe a fifth of what a normal high school prom is, and can also develop scholarships. So kids, if they couldn't afford it, they could write a letter. And he, I mean, it can be said now, he said anybody who wrote him a letter got a scholarship, and it didn't need to be like a college essay type thing. And the kids just had a blast. It was the most wonderful thing to see the kids having so much fun. And again, no alcohol, just some snacks and foods for them. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And to have the adults there to be the red carpet, you know, to line the red carpet for them. That was very moving when you said that. That's what we want in our societies, you know, in our communities. What you just described, you know, that freedom just to be ourselves.
And if I could add something else, like we had one of the principals at the high school was a man who is very Christian, but a great person to talk to. And he would sometimes call me in, you know, because now I'm an out lesbian at the school and I'm the mentor for the club. And just to kind of like one thing he said, like, I don't understand why we need to have clubs for these kids. And, you know, one of the things I said is that, you know, historically, the place that young people could go to be accepted were not places you want young people to go. You don't want a 16-year-old to go to a bar with adults where people are drinking. You want to have healthy places for kids to interact with one another and be comfortable and be with themselves. And like one of the field trips we took, we just went to, you know, one of the parks in the Fremont Hayward area so the kids could just have a picnic outside. And he understood that. And he appreciated that, I think, too. It's like, we want kids to be in healthy relationships. We want them to finish high school. We want them to go to higher education. I mean, I appreciate him for asking the questions he did, because then he could get an answer and we could talk about it.
Yeah, that's we could go a long way in that subject, right? With clubs and how important to have these different clubs in school, because I'm working with one. But we're going to have to move on because I'm glad we got a lot to say, Peg. You got a lot to say. So we're enjoying this interview.
Great.
But now it's time for a song.
Okay.
Your song. You brought a song. Why don't you tell the listeners about it?
Yeah. I mean, I love music, so this was a challenge for me. But then I thought what's probably appropriate for this segment and interview was I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt. I do enjoy songs that are upbeat tempos most of the time. They're kind of good to lift one's mood from time to time. But before I submitted that to you, I just said, well, let me kind of see if I can find the motivation. And it was like, it was written by Gwen Stefani, which gives it even more of a plus. But I guess she said she wrote it because she was in her 30s when her father kind of questioned her driving alone home from a recording session. And she's like, Dad, I'm 30 years old. And so I think the lyrics to the song are what a lot of women have experienced in their lives. I mean, I saw early in life that boys seem to get to do a lot more than girls were supposed to and were supposed to be allowed to do. I mean, this is not a new song by any means, but like what, even in the 80s, there was still a need for that, I guess. So that's why I chose it. It's good women asserting their capabilities. And come on, people, get a clue. It's 2025, for goodness sakes.
You said it.
All right, everybody. Please enjoy this song for our music break. I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt. And we will see you on the other side.
My eyes, I'm exposed, and it's no big surprise. Don't you think I know exactly where I stand? This world is forcing me to hold your hand. 'Cause I'm just a girl, a little lonely. Well, don't let me out of your sight. Oh, I'm just a girl, already a
I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt. Very interesting. And I encourage everyone to go look at the music video and you can see the lyrics there as well. But, you know, it's interesting. You said it was written by Gwen Stefani and the woman singing looks like Gwen Stefani.
Yeah.
But doesn't sound like her. But it's very.
But the style of Gwen. Yeah.
The style of Gwen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for bringing that song and turning us all on to it. And we'd like to get back to you and your own personal story. Thank you so much for sharing in the last segment about yourself as a teacher and some of the stories regarding your students and being the advisor for the LGBT club. We'd like to get more into your own personal coming out story, and we understand you have a good one.
Yeah, and I do feel I'm, again, very fortunate with this, because I had numerous friends who, you know, were disowned from their family. One friend came home from a weekend with friends, and her parents had put like suitcases on the front steps with all her clothing in it. And I mean, again, this is a woman who teaches at a college, you know, this, and even if she were somebody who were unemployed at the time, I mean, it's really, really sad. But I am really fortunate. So it's a bit of a long story, but I think it's entertaining. I hope listeners will find it entertaining. So my mom is on the East Coast, and she was coming to visit me in the West Coast. I was living in Oakland at the time. And I played in the Gay Lesbian Softball League in San Francisco. And all of our sponsors were bars. And of course, the stands were filled by lesbians and lesbian couples and lesbian families. So I thought, like, well, I got to tell my mom for sure. And I was able to delay coming out to my family because I honestly didn't see them that much. And I didn't want to kind of do it with a phone call. I really prefer face-to-face conversations when things are important. So I just thought, okay, I'll just wait till mom comes out. So we picked her up, I picked her up at the airport, drove her to my apartment, you know, sat down with her and said, you know, mom, I have something to tell you. You know, I'm a lesbian. I have great friends. You've always liked my friends. I know you're going to like these friends. And I'm telling you because you'll see a lot of lesbians at the softball game tomorrow. And I had tears in my eyes. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm remembering how perhaps of my mom's generation, every novel and short story about gays and lesbians ends in a tragedy. So I told her, mom, I'm not crying, you know, because I'm sad. It's just emotional. And she's like, okay, honey, okay. And so, you know, we talked a little bit more about other things, both went to bed, get up. And the game, I think, was an early game. So we had our breakfast, drove over to the city. I have my mom sit in the stands. You know, I don't know if there were anybody there I introduced her to. I don't remember that. But she was really up for softball. And my mom had played softball when she was a kid as well. So she was really into watching a softball game. And it was a very good game, you know, back and forth. The other team's in the lead. We're in the lead, back and forth. Well, the team I'm on manages to win at the end of the game, but, you know, it's regardless. It's one of these games that's really exciting. So after the game, you know, our team gets together in our little huddle and we talk a little bit. And I said, well, you know, excuse me, I want to go get my mom and bring her over because I don't know how she was doing with all the lesbians in the stands. But so anyhow, I ran over. It turns out I didn't need to rescue her. I went and got her to bring her over to introduce her to my teammates. And she says, oh, she said, I met some really nice people, you know, while I was watching the game and people were friendly. I'm like, oh, that's great. That's great. So bring her over and I introduce her to my teammates. And the beautiful thing that happened was so many of my teammates gave my mom, I never thought about this, just so many thanks and props for supporting her daughter. It is so good of you to support your daughter. Not every parent would do that. Thank you for coming to the game. So the great thing, I think, for my mom was that she got all this validation. You're being a good mom. You're being an accepting mom. Well, then some people who I didn't even know came over to meet my mom and said, are you the mom of one of the players? That's so nice of you. So this went on for a few minutes. So mom is doing great. I'm relieved as all heck. And then of course, after these softball games, we usually went to one of the bars. So, you know, my teammates say, are you going to come to the bar? And I said, well, I'll see what mom wants to do. Maybe we'll go get something to eat. So I asked my mom, you know, if we go to the bar, you know, do you want to do that? We usually stay for a drink or two, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, well, what would you do if I weren't here? And I said, oh, yeah, I would go to the bar. So she says, well, let's go. So this was Amelia's was our sponsor. So We drive over to Amelia's. Now, one of the beauties of that day was that some friends of mine had had a barbecue the day before, and they had a bunch of leftovers. So they brought all this food. So I'll be honest, we looked a lot healthier than we usually did by having this spread of food at Amelia's for us to drink rather than just, you know, having our beers and cocktails. So we go in, we get some food, you know, people are talking. I don't think she'd mind me mentioning her name because I think Susan Fahey was like such a stalwart at those bars owned by Ricky Stryker. So Susan Fahey hears that my mom is there. So she gets on the microphone and said, "We'd like to welcome Peg Kritz's mother, Marion, who's here from New York." And so mom gets a standing ovation. So talk about validating your parent who's, you know, come to a softball game with her daughter. So again, people go up to her and say hello and say, "It's wonderful that you're here." After a while, we decided we just kind of came on, let's go get some other food to eat and then come back home. So again, as nerve-wracking as it was for me, it turned out great. A side note too, and this to me was informative, that so my godmother is a woman that my mom grew up with. Like they were buddies. They grew up together. They lived on the same block back in Queens, New York. And my mom tells me, like, this is probably years later, out of the blue, my mom says, my godmother, "You know, her son-in-law's cousin is gay." And my first response was like, okay, I know the son-in-law, don't know the cousin. But then I think I started to think, okay, like maybe my mom felt that she was sort of, she was the only person she knew who had somebody gay in their family. But now her buddy from childhood has a gay person in her family. So my mom's not on this island anymore. So anyway, that's my coming out story. And I feel pretty fortunate that it went as well as it did.
I love the team coming forth and complimenting your mom, because they've probably all, you know, many of them have heard or have had experiences opposite of that. And we don't hear too many of that, Peg, on our interviews. You know, we've interviewed a lot of people, and not many have had really positive experiences like you. So it's really a blessing.
It is a blessing. And I think, unfortunately, I think for, again, my observations are that some parents, when they hear gay or lesbian or transitioning or whatever adjective, they then forget the whole rest of that human being who's wonderful in so many ways and talented in so many ways. And, you know, I think in general, our communities do a good job of supporting one another. It's nicer when, you know, society as a whole. I think another thing that I was really fortunate to find was the school district I worked at. And then when I worked at Emergency Communications in San Francisco, I mean, that was another super supportive place where, you know, whoever was getting married, a heterosexual couple, a same-sex couple, we'd have a shower for whoever. Like, it was a reason to have good food and celebrate and kind of break up our challenging jobs for at least an afternoon. So, you know, that helps as well when you can be who you are, wherever you are.
Did you have any idea, though, when you approached your mom and told her that you're a lesbian and what to expect? I mean, did you have any idea? Do you know your mom that well that you knew that she would respond in a positive way? I'm just curious about that.
I didn't know. I wasn't that confident. And I think part of it is that, you know, I kind of ended up on the West Coast for college. And I mean, I don't remember the actual years, how many years it had been since I was, you know, on the East Coast full time. And we communicated, but it had been, you know, it would be maybe phone calls occasionally, lots of letter writing back in those days. But I mean, I think sort of I had created my own life out here, you know, young adult, right? You know everything. You don't need to ask mom questions. But I mean, I had a good support group, lots of friends who are responsible human beings. And I think that was one thing that I felt I could count on, that my mom had always liked my friends. And, you know, some of my high school friends came out later as well. And I just felt that my mom would enjoy the people, you know, on the softball team I played on, and then some of our friends who would come and watch the games. And, but I had no idea it would, and part of the reason it went so well was because of all the great people. I mean, that people, you know, will go up to a complete stranger is a really special and nice thing. And I think a lot of people do that, but you don't know when that's going to happen. Like when you're going to get, it would be nice if we could always find ways to bring out the best in ourselves and others. But I mean, that was...
Well, I was just thinking about your mom and everybody accepting her. And it's almost like a coming out party for your mother. Because a lot of parents who find out that their kids are gay, the parents go in the closet. Like you said, they're on an island. They don't know who of their friends have gay kids, and will they be judged, and will they be thought of as not doing a good job as a parent? And here you are, you tell your mom this very important, fabulous news, and she is embraced. She's not shunned. She's embraced. I mean, she returned home with her heart filled by not only you being honest with her, but by the rich life that you have. Mm-hmm. And the acceptance of her, wow, that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really good point.
So when did you actually know that you like girls? I mean, how far back?
A side note, one of the women that I taught with, she told me, I have to tell you this story, that two of her students came up to her one time and said, "We found out who the first lesbians were." And my friend is like, "What, did they read Sappho or something? Like, what is this going to be?" And the one student says to her, "We don't know their names, but we found out that they met one another playing softball."
Okay.
So my coworker just said, "Oh, that's really interesting," and just kind of moved on. But the reason I bring that up is that when I was probably in middle school, I mean, I was always a tomboy, but it was just that I liked running around. I liked playing sports. I liked riding my bike around, you know, on the East Coast, you know, snowball fights in the winter. But then when I got to about middle school age, my mom kind of said, you know, there's these softball teams. Do you want to play softball on teams? And I thought that would be great. So there was one field that we practiced at that was close enough to my house that I could walk to. So, you know, my mom was always like, don't be late, don't be late. So I would usually get there a little bit early. Sometimes I was the first one there. But the other girl who was always there early was this girl named Barbara. And this was Catholic Girls League. Kind of makes me laugh. Of course it was. And she had, you know, a bunch of sisters because they're a Catholic family and you end up having a lot of kids. But she had, you know, short blondish hair, and she had an older sister in high school, and she would just like always tell me about her older sister in high school and this and that. And we just, you know, would pass the time talking to one another before everybody else got there and we started practicing. And I think that would be my first crush, because she was just somebody who we'd sit down and we'd talk and just wait for the rest of the group to show up. And just, I mean, I just enjoyed spending that time with her. Nothing ever came of it. I don't remember where she lived. You know, at that point in time, you don't have a car. You can't, I don't even remember what school she went to. We didn't go to the same school. But it was just this nice, you know, and then we got to play softball. I mean, what could be better? But then in high school, I had a boyfriend in high school, and that's actually how I ended up on the West Coast, because he was going to Stanford. And in addition to our relationship at that time, he would, you know, again, the whole letter writing thing, that is like, had a final in December and he was reading the novel for his class outside in a t-shirt and shorts. And I'm just like, I got to get out of upstate New York and get me to some warm weather. So I applied to some schools and ended up coming out here. And our relationship lasted probably a year or two after that, when then it's kind of like my feelings went back to women. And so by then we were sort of not really in a relationship, but so that end of that relationship, I think, went fine. We remain friends, he and I, and, you know, he's in another state right now, but we still communicate with one another. I mean, I think in many ways he's a good guy, but I am obviously a lesbian and have had a number of relationships. So I guess the group of friends I met, you know, you end up with, I think you find your own kind, and it just sort of, I think a few of us were coming out around the same time, but that group of friends in college where I did come out completely, group of us are still friends and are in touch with one another and get together for one another's birthdays. And I mean, then that's a real special group of important women in my life as well. So
what about family members? Don't you have a sibling?
I have one sister. We are both active. I love bike riding. She's a runner. She has one son, and they're all on the East Coast. I'm lucky to still have my mom. I lost my dad, and he was only 42 when he passed away. And he grew up in rural Western Pennsylvania in coal mining country. So what I heard from his sisters, my aunts, is that they never had good medical care, and he had asthma as a kid. And his sister said after he passed that, you know, they were sure that whatever they would give them for their illnesses were, who knows, maybe trial drugs or something like that. They had a series of books when I was in elementary school that probably were fiction, but I just thought they were, you know, they were biographies. But anyhow, they probably were stories about what it might have been like for these famous people when they were kids. And also Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn were other novels that I loved. So this whole wilderness and quiet and walking in creeks, and this was where my dad grew up. And I don't know if you can kind of have that in your genes, the desire to be under trees. Anyhow, maybe that's how I ended up here.
I think so.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So that's your, so this is retirement. This is the retirement life.
Mm-hmm.
It's been wonderful talking with you, Peg, and learning about you and your life. We really want to thank you for being our guest. And we like to end our show with asking you if you have any words of wisdom for our listeners. What can they learn from your experience?
Yeah, you know, I, you know, obviously words of wisdom, that's a, it's an onus and that's a burden. But I guess in general, I like the thinking that we should expect good things from one another, that expect good rather than second guess or question one's motives. One of my students one time just said, you know, it's really just simple. All we have to do is be nice. And, you know, this was not a babe, but, you know, it was a thoughtful young man. So let's just go with that. Let's all be as nice as we can. And thank you for having me. I hope your audience finds this interesting. And I really enjoyed conversing with you both. So thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
Very welcome.
So it's that time to say goodbye. And we want everyone to remember that just like Peg, you too can be living proof that through being visible and vibrant and perseverant and finding your niche, you can make this world a better world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we will be back next month. Until then,
good night.
I step out of the ordinary. I can feel my soul ascending. I'm on my way. Can't stop me now. And you can.
support for Outbeat Radio on KRCBFM comes from listeners and from Rocky, the free-range chicken, and Rosie, the original organic chicken. Air-chilled, non-GMO, locally raised right here in Sonoma County, with no antibiotics ever. More information is available at rockyandrosie.com. You're listening to 104.9 KRCBFM Roanoke Park and KRCGFM Windsor, Sonoma County's NPR station. It's 9 p.m. Stay with us. Le Jazz Hot is next.